Welcome to Akhatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhatra AI.
Welcome back. Today we are diving deep into, well, a literary classic that just refuses to stay tucked away on the children's shelf, E.B. White's Charlotte's Web.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those books, isn't it? Hits you differently depending on when you read it.
It really does. And White, I mean, he was such a master of that clear, elegant prose.
He really was. Not just novels, either. A brilliant essayist for The New Yorker, co-author of The Elements of Style. You know, some say Charlotte's Web almost reads like these perfect little essays strung together.
That's a great way to put it. Essays on loneliness, on farm life, on finding the right word.
Exactly. He had this knack for finding these universal truths in really ordinary, even muddy circumstances.
And the origin of the book itself came straight from his own farm in Maine, right?
Hmm.
Yeah, apparently he was really wrestling with these two conflicting things, the fate of the pigs he was raising, which was, you know, slaughter, and at the same time watching this spider meticulously spinning its web and egg sac. Wow. So trying to reconcile that harsh reality of the agricultural cycle with, well, the impulse to protect something vulnerable and maybe beautiful.
Precisely. Yes. And you feel that tension right away in the book. It doesn't start peaceful. It starts with a crisis.
With Fernarable.
Yeah.
8 years old.
Mm-hmm. Standing up against killing the runt pig.
Mm-hmm.
She's like the book's initial moral compass. That line is just so memorable. But it's unfair. The pig couldn't help being born small, could it?
Mm-hmm.
It sets the whole ethical stage, doesn't it? This idea that life itself gives something worth.
So that's our task today, really, to see how White takes that simple plea and builds this whole barnyard fable around it, exploring these pretty profound adult questions.
Yeah, questions about purpose, sacrifice, how we even perceive value.
Okay, so let's get into the story. Fern saves the piglet, names him Wilbur.
Right, and she nurtures him.
Yeah.
But he gets bigger, naturally, and he has to be sold.
To the Zuckerman farm, her uncle's place.
And that move is key. It takes Wilbur away from Fern's sort of innocent personal protection. Suddenly he's in this, well, complex barn society, just another farm animal.
And his first feelings there are, what? Loneliness? Anxiety?
Definitely. Just pure loneliness and fear in this new social ecosystem.
And that loneliness, that vulnerability, it leads him straight into the terrible news.
Yes. The old sheep lays it out for him. The fate of spring pigs.
Christmas. The smokehouse, it's brutal. And Wilbur's reaction is just raw panic. That cry, I don't want to die. Save me. Somebody save me.
Yeah.
Chilling. But then a voice answers.
A quiet voice in the darkness. Charlotte A. Kvatica. What an entrance.
She is, biologically speaking, a predator, right?
Yeah.
A spider.
Yeah, a cold-blooded killer, technically. But she becomes the absolute embodiment of, like, selfless wisdom and calm articulation in that barn.
The irony there is just incredible. But it feels real. She doesn't stop being a spider.
No, she just finds a new purpose for her skills,
and
she gives him hope almost immediately. Makes that famous vow.
I will not let you die. I am going to save you.
Such a powerful moment, committing to this huge, life-altering task.
But let's dig into that vow a bit, because later she says something quite interesting about her own motivation, doesn't she? She does, that line, by helping you, perhaps I was trying to lift up my life a trifle. Heaven knows anyone's life can stand a little of that.
Mm.
Right. So is White kind of nudging us here, suggesting that maybe even the most selfless act isn't entirely pure, that there's always a little something in it for the giver?
Well, I think that's the brilliance of White's honesty. It keeps the story from getting too, you know, sentimental or saccharine.
Okay.
Charlotte's practical. She knows about mortality, including her own. So wanting to lift up her life, it's not really selfishness, is it? It's more like finding meaning through doing something significant.
Ah, so by giving Wilbur purpose, she finds profound value for her own kind of fleeting existence.
Exactly. And it establishes that this friendship, which crosses all these natural lines, is going to demand a real sacrifice.
Okay, let's talk about how this crisis, this vow, changes the characters. Wilbur first. He starts out so naive, so scared.
Totally dependent.
Yeah.
But Charlotte's plan, her friendship, it forces him to mature. He goes from being completely wrapped up in his own fear.
His fear of dying.
Right, to understanding loyalty and responsibility, not just as ideas, but as things he owes to Charlotte.
And his big moment isn't winning the prize, you'd say.
I don't think so. I think it's later. It's his final act protecting her egg sac, her legacy.
So he becomes the protector. He goes from needing saving to saving the next generation.
Precisely. A full transformation.
And Charlotte's arc, it's arguably the most heroic in the book.
Oh, absolutely. It's all about this immense selfless effort and then this incredibly graceful acceptance of her own end.
She uses every last bit of energy for Wilbur.
Yeah, it's like her life finds its ultimate meaning in that final act. She knows her time is limited. She fights against that, against the natural order in a way, with your skill. So her death isn't tragic, exactly. It feels earned, complete.
A life well lived and maybe well written.
Huh. Yes, exactly. Well written in the web.
Then there's Fern. She's the catalyst at the start, the champion of life, the bridge, you could say, between the animal and human world.
She really is. That ability she has, hearing the animals, understanding them, it's like the symbol of pure childhood empathy.
But then she starts spending less time at the barn.
Mm-hmm. That theme of growing up and letting go,
mm-hmm.
It's maybe the most realistic part of the book, even if it feels a bit sad.
She gets interested in Henry Fussy. Human society calls her away.
And White presents it not as a betrayal of the animals, but just life.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up means that intense, specific childhood connection changes, evolves, maybe becomes a broader respect, but that direct line fades.
It's necessary, but poignant.
Very.
Okay, rounding out the main players, we absolutely have to talk about Templeton.
Ooh, Templeton the Rat. The ultimate pragmatist.
Cynical, gluttonous, completely self-interested, the perfect foil to Charlotte.
He has none of that, what does the book call it? Milk of rodent kindness.
Huh. No, definitely not. But, crucially, he's needed.
That's the clever part, isn't it? White shows how even pure self-interest can, sometimes accidentally, serve a greater good within a community.
He retrieves the words from the dump?
Only because he's promised first dibs on Wilbur's slop trough. But Charlotte needs those words. She needs the raw material for her art.
It's like a lesson in, I don't know, project management. Sometimes you need the guy who's just in it for himself to get the job done.
You really do. He does the dirty work that lets the genius happen.
And that genius is the webs. Charlotte's incredible PR campaign.
It really is like Crisis Communications 101, isn't
yeah.
it? Using her web as this literal canvas for changing minds.
Talk us through the words, some pig.
That's the start. Makes him stand out. An anomaly, then terrific. Up to the ante, then radiant.
Making him sound almost special glorious.
Exactly. And finally, humble. Each one builds on the last. It's a masterclass in rhetoric aimed at shifting human perception.
And this is where White really explores the power of language, of art itself. The words aren't lies, are they?
No, not exactly. The book calls them revelation.
Revelation. Okay, meaning they help people see qualities that were maybe always there in Wilbur. His gentleness, his sweetness.
Qualities that just went unnoticed before. Charlotte, the writer, uses her craft to illuminate that hidden worth. It's a metaphor for what all good writing or art tries to do, perhaps.
Transform reality by changing how we see it.
Yeah. And the big test comes at the county fair.
The climax. Will the fame hold up outside the barn? Wilbur sees his competition.
Uncle.
Yeah.
That enormous pig. Wilbur falters. He doubts.
And Charlotte, she's exhausted by this point. She's already spun her egg sack, her magnum opus.
She's running on fumes. But she gathers her last strength for one more word. The crucial one.
Humbilal.
Humbly. It's the key, I think. It stops Wilbur from just being a spectacle, a freak show pig. It anchors him, captures his actual nature.
And it works. He wins the special prize. His life is guaranteed.
She did it. Fulfilled her vow. Total victory. But the cost is immense.
Which brings us to that final section. Mortality. The cycle of life. White handles Charlotte's death with such honesty.
Gentle honesty. It's sad, deeply sad, but it doesn't feel like a tragedy. Her life had meaning right up to the end.
She accepts it with dignity.
Yeah. Her farewell with Wilbur is less about mourning and more about celebrating their connection. Her focus, even as she's dying, is on continuity, on the egg sack.
And Wilbur carries that forward. He's heartbroken, sure, but he's changed. He takes on that responsibility.
Guards the egg sack all winter. Such loyalty.
Then spring comes. The spiders hatch.
Most fly away, you know, carried on the wind. That's nature's cycle, indifferent, grand.
But not all of them.
No, three stay. Joy, Irenia, and Ellie. They choose to stay in the barn doorway.
Ensuring that Charlotte's spirit, that mix of kindness, friendship, writing continues right there where it all happened.
It's a beautiful image of legacy.
And the book's final lines just tie it all together perfectly, that tribute to her rare qualities.
It is not often that someone comes along who's a true friend and a good writer. Charlotte was both.
It cements that connection, doesn't it, between writing and compassion, between art and friendship.
It's White's ultimate statement, maybe, that the best creativity comes from compassion. Her writing was her friendship. Her friendship fueled her writing.
It's just, yeah, profoundly simple and beautiful.
So what does it all teach us, do you think?
Well, I think it shows that grief is kind of the natural price we pay for love. But that friendship, that tremendous thing, as the book calls it, makes life meaningful. It helps us face everything, birth to death, with a sense of peace.
And maybe it teaches us that value isn't just about size or usefulness. It's something we can actually create and communicate just by paying attention, by choosing the right words. So maybe a final thought for you listening. How often do we miss the quiet miracles right in front of us, like a spider's web, because we're looking for something, I don't know, more spectacular?
Yeah. What if we tried applying a bit of humble or radiant observation to the everyday people and moments in our own lives? How might that change what we value?
Something to think about.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by ACATRA Foundation.